CliffCentral.com.
You're listening to The Bounce Show with Byron Karpinski. I'm Hugh Bladen, and it's on CliffCentral.com.
It's Cliff Central, Blades, and it's Ben Karpinski.
Why didn't you tell me? Ben Karpinski on CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, good morning. Hello, hello. Wherever you are listening to this, whether it's on podcast or live, welcome to the live listener, which is you, on a Thursday, the 18th of May, getting into this autumn, which I got to say, I mean, is autumn even a season? Basically, I am of the opinion it goes from good winter to bad winter into, oh, good, it's summer. It's winter again. Right, so today we're going to get straight into a special guest. And normally I crap on about what's happening in sport for a good 10 minutes or so. I do still have some weekend recaps, and I still want to talk about the football, the rugby, cheaper. There's quite a lot to get through. There was Maria Sharapova getting snubbed by the French Open. There is, I found a guy called Greg Popovich, who is this NBA coach guy. Now, he was an ex-player, but he gives some of the best interviews you ever heard, mostly because he uses like three or four words. And then I found some old Aussie rules commentary through my Aussie mate Dennis. So, you know, sometimes I always have a good go about the fact that commentary is so bland and boring here in South Africa, but for most sports actually, and people who are just basically doing a job bringing us these links. So I always love bringing you the more colorful side of these things, and today I've got some absolute beauts, but they'll be towards the end of the show because my guest is already here sitting in studio. It's Jennifer Hintenberger. Now, if you haven't heard of her, it means you don't exercise enough. I think that's going to be a fair comment. Jennifer is a world record holder. Now, the Arnold Classic recently, I think I brought you about 60 different sports that people were doing amazing things in. So Jennifer does things with kettlebells, but that's just one element of her. She's also someone who had a massive transformation sort of earlier in her life where she chose exercise being a way forward. It changed who she was and changed what she does. So she's got more than just the story of how you're going to get a six-pack. Jennifer? Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Okay, great. Now, I'm always so nervous when people sit in these positions because I don't normally run the desk from here. But here you are, you're on the mic. I haven't cocked that up.
Yep,
so, I got an email a couple of weeks ago from... I get quite a few mails from people saying, would you like to interview my client, or we're doing this event, you know, can we get on your show kind of stuff? The answer is 99% no, mostly because it's like, oh, how am I ever going to make the half an hour out of that, or how am I going to make that interesting? So I'm sorry, PR agencies, I don't mean to come across as that guy, but there are just some better stories out there than not. Jennifer, your story is rather interesting. Firstly, where are you from? Where are you based now? Because judging from your competitions, you are all over the world. But where do you call home?
Canada. So I'm from Canada, and home is Canada. I just haven't been there in 5 months, since December.
Okay, so born, raised,
yep,
Canada through and through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to quote a cliche, you know what cold weather's all about.
Oh, do I ever.
Okay, so your website, first of all, very good place to start with you. You got a great bio there. Kettlebells, we'll get into that in a bit, because firstly, I want to know what gravitated you towards kettlebells. These things are not easy in the beginning. Like most people, when they want to get into good shape or get into an exercise, that's not quite what they go for, especially kids. But now, your story was that you got to a position where you weren't happy with your body, your appearance, that kind of stuff, and you decided there was going to be a change. So from a sporting background as such, like your growing up process, were you against sport? Were you just not into it?
No.
Was it just not like a stimulation towards it?
No, I was always into sport. That's the thing, is I just didn't understand nutrition. So I played, you know, from 4 to 14, those childhood years, I played soccer 10 years straight. I was a figure skater for those 10 years.
Okay.
And then in high school, I was playing volleyball, rugby, basketball, badminton. I played...
You played
all the
rugby.
Main sports. Yes, I actually played rugby was my main sport. So I played 3 years in high school, and then I went on to play 5 years university, and I also played provincially for Ontario. So I was quite good at rugby and the sports that I played. It's just I was a really big girl.
Because I was looking at pictures here from you And like, I mean, obviously, I couldn't match you today with you on those years. How old were you when you were, say, at your biggest, so to speak?
At my biggest would have been probably when I opened my gym, which was around 27 years old. So I'm 36 now. About nine years ago, I guess, I was my biggest.
Okay, so like, what was the big thing? And the reason I ask you this is because a lot of people get to a point in their lives where, I mean, winter's a time where this becomes quite prevalent. A lot of people get to a point when they go, okay, I really need to make a change. Like, something has to happen now. I'm not going on just some quick fix sort of diet. I'm actually going to make a proper change. When was that point in your life?
For me, I had to get really sick, and that's where I feel like I really do believe everything happens for a reason in life. And for me, I feel that, you know, I had a lot of health conditions and a lot of issues that I could have looked at and thought, why me? You know, I'm 20-something years old. I am an athlete, a relatively good athlete. I train 6 to 7 days a week. I was a personal trainer when I was that big even. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I knew the fitness side really, really well. I just didn't understand the nutrition side. And I became sick in my early 20s. I had all kinds of symptoms from, you know, I had 3 stomach ulcers. I had a hiatal hernia. My esophagus was eroding. I had all kinds of gastrointestinal issues, distension,
pain. I can see where the natural why me comes into it.
You know, right. Yeah. And then I ended up.
This is a hard luck tale of note.
Oh, yeah. And it's really long and involved. But I ended up being diagnosed with stage 3 kidney disease, polycystic ovarian syndrome. I had all kinds of conditions, and it was a long process to be diagnosed because a lot of symptoms overlap. And so I went through this huge process of seeing, I don't even know, 20, 30, 40 doctors in Canada. And then eventually in the Philippines, I'd been there personal training. I went into emergency and those doctors ran all kinds of tests on me and were like, told me those conditions I had. And then that's where I was introduced to learning how to heal the body through nutrition. It was the doctors in the Philippines that said, listen, in Canada, you'd likely undergo a number of surgeries for certain conditions I had, but we want to figure out what's causing these problems instead of just treating the symptoms with medication and surgery. And so that started my journey towards understanding that food can create disease or it can heal your body and really...
All right, go to the third world, huh?
Yeah, I know. Who would have thought?
But it must have been kind of frustrating. Like, you know, you don't want to be someone's test subject. You don't want all this attention around what's wrong with you. You want to know how you can make yourself better. Do you find that also didn't really help, you know, because getting in shape and becoming like this whole change you want to see, a lot of us are around positivity. And that must have been so difficult if people are telling you, well, you've got this. Well, this is what's going to hinder you. I mean, like, you must have got to a stage where you were tired of that as well.
Oh, there was a point where it sounds kind of crazy, but my younger brother had cancer. So he had cancer for 5 years, leukemia, from 19 to 25. And watching him is probably what helped me, because I think knowing that I had to be strong for him made me strong for myself, and that in turn kept me in a positive place. I had those moments of being ready, like, I don't feel like I'm living, so what's the point?
Right.
You know, but then I would just kind of look towards the fight that he was doing on his own and know that, what are my options? Either I feel bad for myself and I continue to get more and more sick, or I slowly try to figure things out on my own.
So personal training, you said you were personal training already through this phase. When did you start doing that then?
I was personal training. So I did my first degree, bachelor's in kinesiology, early 20s. So I would have been maybe 21, 22.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And just to kind of get an understanding, so you're saying that, you know, because you were always so sporty, it was very difficult to you. Nutrition was something that obviously was part of your life back then. But what were the big changes that you made then from what you knew to post the Philippine epiphany, so to speak?
Right.
What were some of the big sort of catalysts as far as nutrition from there?
Yes, that's a great question, because as an athlete, I did have my coaches telling me the usual stuff. At least in Canada, they're still on the whole, okay, we've got a big game tomorrow, you've got a carb load tonight, get in your pastas and blah, blah, blah. So that's the kind of nutrition that I was practicing at the time when I was in high school. And then university, as a personal trainer, they were teaching about high protein, low fat, low carbs. And so I did that. So my typical diet would be waking up and having egg whites with, you know, different types of vegetables, And then
yummy.
Right? Yeah, it was always like egg white frittatas or egg white oatmeal pancakes. A lot of people in the fitness industry, they know this type of diet. And then other meals would be salmon or chicken with broccoli or salad. And it was just...
And did you have to weigh all that to make sure you had the right...
Of course, yes. Everyone's got their scale. That's just expected. And so I lived like that. And that's when I became really, really toxic. So one of the biggest things... There's two things that changed. One was not focusing so much on protein because there's a huge protein push in the fitness industry. And
It's everywhere. I mean, you get the impression that if you're not on full protein, then you're never going to get gains. You're never going to be lean.
That's right. It's impossible to have muscle without protein. So what I learned from one doctor was he said he would speak in front of others and he would say, okay, so listen, do you know someone who knows someone with heart disease? And everyone would put their hands up. Who knows someone who has diabetes? Hands all go up. Who knows someone with high cholesterol, cancer? Hands up, hands up. Who knows someone with protein deficiency? And nothing.
Wow, like, yeah.
You know, and
you
that,
really hit a lot.
Right? And that really struck a chord in me because I was nervous when I was diagnosed with kidney disease. They were like, okay, stage 4 is dialysis, and then stage 5 is renal failure. And dialysis meant I was going to be spending hours every day in a hospital, you know, having apheresis, like blood transfusions or whatnot, getting blood cleaned. And I thought, well, I don't want to live like that, so what can I do? And they said to take it easy on my kidneys, which meant decreasing protein. As a personal trainer, I'm freaking out. What am I going to do? I'm not going to grow muscle. But then I learned about that, and I thought, okay, I'm going to... I actually became vegan. So you do know that I run a nutrition program, and there is this...
Well, again, like going back to your website as a start point, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, I know there is. And so a lot of people worry because I'm vegan that my program is, but it's not. I definitely welcome everybody to eat meat and eggs and all this and whatnot on it, but I just am not crazy about telling people they need to have obscene amounts of it because I learned this through my own experience. So anyhow, I stopped eating animal-based proteins because they're supposed to be more difficult on my kidneys, and because they were damaged, I stopped doing that to allow them to heal. And the way that I monitored how I was doing as far as protein was people say that protein is related to your muscle mass, your strength gains, your hair, your nail growth, sure, et cetera. And so as long as that continued to improve, then I didn't really obsess about it. And so it's now been 8 years vegan, 2 years, 10 years total, because I was vegetarian for 2 years. And my gains in weightlifting, which is definitely a good way to monitor strength progress,
have only ever progressed.
Yeah, they've only ever progressed. So first thing was not emphasizing on protein, and the other one that I learned in the Philippines and now everyone in the world hears about is just learning about what your food intolerances are or food sensitivities. So the major ones like gluten, dairy, obviously not eating sugar and crap like that.
Yeah, well, sugar's crack. I mean, I think no matter what you bring into the party body-wise, I think we can all decide that one. But it's interesting what you say, because people forget that all our organs have a certain sort of role to play, right? And the kidneys are so vital. I mean, those things are fantastic. If you don't have those working well, like you say. I remember John Lomu. Obviously, you know rugby. So that guy who was a freak of nature – I mean, he was like the Concord of rugby players.
Right.
He was ahead of his time. Nothing's ever been like that ever since. His kidneys packed up completely. The guy was on dialysis for so long.
Right.
He just went from this colossus into nothing. People were saying that maybe he had too much protein growing up. Maybe his kidneys were shot because of that. But to understand these things, and I believe we all have these issues, right? I believe most of us are lactose intolerant. People don't understand this, but I really do believe that we're all eating a lot of the wrong stuff. But what you say about the kidneys is so interesting, and the fact that piling on protein is pretty much going to be the worst thing. Now, I'm curious about all these things, and I often do my own fitness challenges, and I'm always trying different things nutritionally. I try to be a vegan for 3 months.
Yep.
It was difficult for me. Just getting back to like it works for you, and you don't say everyone must do it, which is great.
Right.
Because everyone is a bit different. Like, I love the fact that I tried veganism, though, because it made me understand food. Now, on the back of that, I realized I should be eating animal-based proteins because I'm quite slender and I waste away quite quickly.
Right.
So that didn't help me, but it made me understand that. All within reason, I guess. But the idea of supplements. Now, as a vegan, do you still take supplements? Do you use the pea-based protein, that kind of stuff? Is it something you still have in your life, or do you not even have a need for that?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's been an interesting process for me. Because once again, with the protein focus, a lot of people ask me that right away. They're like, okay, so you're vegan, so that means that you're getting your proteins from soy or nuts, seeds, chickpeas, lentils, legumes, all of this. And to be honest, I usually use protein powders. I don't eat a lot of tofu or tempeh. Nuts and seeds and beans, they all bother my stomach. So,
oh, wow.
I don't. Like, I eat them from here to there, like, time to time. Say, last night I had some chickpeas in my salad because someone made it for me, and it was awesome. But if I were to eat chickpeas on a regular basis, my stomach's not a fan. So I just don't do it, and I don't really worry about it too much. Yeah, if I do use every now and then, if I feel like adding protein powder to my green smoothies, that's what I'm big into is smoothies, because I'm all about anti-inflammatory nutrition. So doing things to decrease the inflammation that I'm creating through training.
Sorry, just get a little bit close to the mic there.
Oh, yeah. I'm too far. Okay. So every time, if I do, I use a raw, like 100% brown rice. Protein.
Of course, because you get the brown rice proteins as well. So when you first started this, I mean, how difficult was it to go from not only are you used to eating all these proteins, but we've become indoctrinated to it? So, like, did you get to a breaking point where things just became easier, or was it a bit of a struggle for you?
Oh, honestly, it was a huge struggle. There were times that I cried because it was so hard. So when I hear people, and I was a food addict, so if I were to have a pizza, order a large pizza, excuse me, it was for me. Mm. Like, I would order another one for my friends or whatever, because that's how much I ate. If I had toast in the morning, it meant I'm having a loaf of toast, not two slices or three. Like, I had a legit food addiction. So when I work with people nowadays and they're saying, I can't live without my bread, I can't live without pasta, and so on, I'm like, yes, you can. It's not going to be easy. But once you get past, like you said, that breaking point, I don't have cravings ever. And I would wake up in the middle of the night, 2, 3, 4 a.m., and if I thought, you know, I wanted Reese's peanut butter cups, I would not be able to go back to sleep. So I'd get in my car and go get them. And then I'd grab usually, some, you know, a couple liters of ice cream and some cookies and so on. So then I'd come home and binge eat all night. Like, food absolutely controlled me at one point in my life.
So you have to guilt exercise on top of that.
Yes. And then, that's right. And that's a legit disorder, too. That's actually considered another form of eating disorder, in addition to bulimia and anorexia, is binge exercising or over exercising. And like you said, it's out of guilt. It's exercise bulimia is another term that they use it. So you binge, and then instead of purge, you binge and then overtrain. And so I definitely had this problem. So it was really difficult at first because I was used to those things, and going to events were really difficult, you know, family gatherings, and your friends are used to you.
And that's probably the reason why I couldn't do the whole vegan thing, because I'd go to events, these trays would come by, and you'd be going, oh, okay, there's dairy, there's meat, there's, I mean, basically celery.
Yeah.
Because they don't ever cater for that kind of stuff, you know. So it's like someone's going to walk out with a vegan tray.
Yeah, right. I know. I mean, if anything, we usually get fruit and vegetable trays. But so then you develop skills to prepare for that, so you're not miserable. So if I'm on my way to an event, I know, like, I'll eat right before I get there so that I'm not worried about food. And then, you know, maybe I'll have a glass of wine or something to occupy me so that I'm still enjoying myself but not fixated on the food.
You still drink a little bit of alcohol then? Okay, so how quick was the progress as far as... It was difficult. It was drastic as far as your change in nutrition. So when did the weight sort of like fall off? Was it quite a quick transition?
I would say that. So say my heaviest was around 200 pounds. I think that's like 90 kilos or so.
Yeah, it's like mid-90s, yeah.
I should do the math on that. So I would say the first 30 pounds, and once again, I don't know kilos,
it's
but 30 to 35.
10 to 12 kilograms are right there, I think.
Yeah, the first half brought me down to 165 pounds, and... once I was at that weight, that was my goal. I thought, so right now I weigh around 132, and when I got to 165, I was really happy because I never thought I'd be 165, and so I was super excited. And then it just became about, because I'd been so sick, that was my changing point, right? It wasn't about weight loss. From 14 until, you know, my mid-20s, my obsession with weight loss was because I wanted to look better.
Yeah.
It was when I got sick. It wasn't... looks was never quite enough. You know, it's enough to get you going, but I don't find it's enough for myself or the people that I work with to keep you going. Once it becomes about health, then you're going to stick to changes. And so I lost that weight because I'd been sick, and then I had found kettlebell sport along the way, and then it became about, I want to be a better athlete. So if I compete, say, in 2 months, these next 8 weeks, this training has to be good. Every single session has to count. So if I binge eat tonight, or if I eat some wheat and my stomach's all bloated, that's going to affect how I'm able to lift, how I'm able to train. and then I'm not going to do as well as I could in my competition.
It kind of keeps you on track, though, because you know you're not just, like you say, you're not just exercising to look better. You've actually got a physical goal here, and doing this makes you better at what you really love.
Mm-hmm.
So did you find that when you were becoming in better shape, your desire for exercise then grew because now you know you're capable of more?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's always this sort of personal game with yourself. When you realize how much you can do, you kind of think, never thought I could do that. What else can I do?
Exactly. It triggers, then I keep pushing these boundaries that you kind of, you know, impose on yourself. But what made you go to kettlebell sports, though? Because for a lot of people listening to this, firstly, what's a kettlebell and kettlebell sports?
Like, right.
It's quite obscure.
Yes. I just want to say real quick with the rest of that weight loss, it was like 1 pound every 2 months. Or 1 pound a month for years.
Okay.
So people who think, you know, they hit a plateau and they should quit, if you focus on your health, maybe the next 30 took me 2 years, but I'm down another 30 pounds and I'm at a healthy body weight. So it's worth it.
And that's the thing. It's gradual. It's not like some quick thing that's just going to happen. And then, you know, it's how you keep it off. At least then it's progressing.
That's right. And now it's been off for years and it's no longer a concern. Is it going to come back? I mean, there's always that little bit. But
well, I mean, obviously everyone's got a slight thing, but you know what's possible and that's not coming back. You're not coming back to that.
That's right.
So kettlebell sports.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about what drew you to it and a little bit more about, because, I mean, you're a world champion in a whole bunch of things, right? You compete around the world in kettlebell sports.
Yes.
Which makes you a kettlebell professional athlete,
it
essentially.
Does?
Yeah. That's quite a title. I mean, at a dinner party, that's going to turn some heads.
Yeah, it's always an interesting conversation. It's not the most usual sport. Kettlebell sport accident, I actually came across accidentally. I opened a gym in Canada and I learned how to use kettlebells in Australia. I was doing my master's degree there in teaching biology and phys ed, and a gentleman there introduced me to kettlebells. I'll skip a few chapters. I opened my gym in Canada using kettlebells because I knew it was a hot word, because they were new at the time. It was they weren't new. They were hundreds of years old in Russia, but they were new in Canada. And
of course,
so
it would come from Russia, being such a rudimental thing.
Right, yes. And so I use them there, and then people would come into the gym and say, okay, well, what are your kettlebell certifications? And I was like, oh, here I have my personal, you know, I've been a personal trainer for years. I've been a rugby coach for 8 years. I've been an athlete my whole life. I got my bachelor's degree, my master's degree, but they want a kettlebell specific certification. So I Googled online and I found one called World Kettlebell Club Kettlebell Coach. And so I went to the U.S. for the weekend to take the course, and I showed up. And you're probably used to seeing the black kettlebells, I'm guessing.
Sure.
Have you seen the big, colorful ones? They're like red, orange, yellow.
I've seen different colors, but I just thought that was just someone spray painting them for.
Right.
So they stand out to you.
Oh, okay. So the different colors, they're sports. So there's kettlebell for fitness or conditioning, the black bells. And that's usually called a hard style training. And then the kettlebell sport has all of these, the big bells that are colorful, and the colors represent the weight. So red bells, for example, are always 32 kilograms. Yellow is 16 kilograms.
Okay, I've got a video of you with these things as a reference. Okay, cool. Gotcha.
Yeah, so those are sport kettlebells. And so I showed up at this certification in the U.S. thinking there's going to be all the little black bells that I'm used to, and I'm going to learn how to teach them better for fitness. And there's all these big, bright, colorful kettlebells. And there was this girl there from Australia, and she was doing this 10-minute set. So she started lifting the kettlebell, and she lifted for 10 minutes. Everybody's watching and cheering her on. And I said to the guy beside me, I'm like, what's going on right now? And then he's like, she's trying to achieve her master of sport. I'm like, what's her master of sport? And he's like, are you kidding me? Like, that's what we're here for right now. And so it was that day I had gone to a kettlebell sport certification. And that's how I found out that it even was a sport. And I watched the first Australian become master of sport there, and her coach was the first American master of sport. And so I said to them, I said, listen, are there any Canadian master of sports? I didn't even know this is a sport. And they said, no, not as of yet. There's one guy, Eric St. Ange, who's trying to go for it right now, but no one's done it yet. And so I thought, okay, can I do this? Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, 100%. And so I hired the American coach, and she brought me to master of sport pretty quick. And then it was exactly what you said. It was, what else can I do? And then it just kept going.
The nice thing here is that when anything weightlifting, you always think of major weights. Whereas with this, you're working on like massive reps. Your personal record of a 20 kilogram snatch is 175 reps.
Yes.
Thinking one go, like one session.
Yes, and I haven't had much. That's the one movement I don't have much experience in yet. So with a 16 kilogram, I've done 242 reps.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I'm just getting into the 20 kilo snatch now. I've been mostly focusing on doubles. So, like, I don't know if you've seen any of me lifting two bells.
Yep.
But there's recently I did a world record. It was clean and jerks, which means you swing it through your legs into your chest, into rack position above your head.
Yeah.
And so I did 110 reps with two 16-kilogram bells in 10 minutes. So the sport's really interesting because, like you said, it's not super heavy, but, I mean, that's heavy. That's 32 kilograms that you're lifting. So you have to be strong.
Yeah, exactly.
But then, you know, you have to have endurance because you can't put them down. You have to hold on to them for 10 minutes. And then if you want to win or if you want to break records, you have to be fast. So 11 reps a minute, that's just over 5 seconds per rep continuously for 10 minutes straight to get the bells from between your legs into rack position above your head back down. So, yeah.
But that's pretty amazing. I know from my limited experience about just various exercise programs I've done, like this is like the holy grail of things because you're getting the speed, the stamina, the strength. And what I find interesting about this as well, there's some coordination involved here. Now, I'm on a new thing now. I'm going to try getting to yoga.
Right.
Because I'm not completely uncoordinated, but when I try to do these things, I literally feel like I've just walked into my own body. But by doing this, you're learning more about body movements as well. Now, a lot of these things, again, this is just my personal take on it. People get into a sport or they get into a movement and it doesn't work because they lose interest or they find it's too difficult after a couple of weeks. Then they go back to square one of eating lasagna on the couch. So the weight that they've lost might go back. But whereas with this, you've actually got to kind of train your body to move in a certain way. Now, is this, again, something that you believe is a real benefit of something like this because you're actually moving your body differently?
I'm not sure what you're asking. Do you mean for...
So like a kettlebell is a sport because like we used to, when we go to sport to gyms, right?
Yeah.
Treadmills, I don't know, bike.
Okay.
Certain movements like a bench press or a bicep curl. I mean, these are pretty low effort things, right?
Yes.
Whereas with this, there's quite a lot of coordination, which then gets your body moving differently, which will get the different systems working.
Yeah. No, I think it's brilliant because of all the things you said. So it's going to help you develop strength and speed, endurance, power, but it's also going to be really great for helping improve joint mobility. For example, I have three screws in my right shoulder, and yeah, rugby, and different types of injuries, and I train students, you know, who have full-on hip replacements and knee issues, and so they can't do a lot of cardio because there's a lot of impact with jogging or jump squats or different types of things like this. So other than swimming, kettlebells gives them a chance to work with weight and still get their heart rate up, develop strength, and all of these other aspects of fitness safely. So it's really good. And another awesome thing about it is that it's kind of like karate. You know how karate, they have belts?
Yep.
They have like different color belts and you work your way up, brown belt, black belt, all the way up to the top. So in kettlebell sport, you start with an 8-kilogram kettlebell. It's different for men and women, but say, for example, you're a beginner, you would try to achieve a certain number of reps with 8-kilogram, and then you get what's called a rank 4.
Okay.
Once you achieve rank 4, you move up to a 12-kilogram bell and work on rank 3, and then you go to a 16-kilogram bell, rank 2, rank 1, and then it goes candidate for master of sport, world-class master of sport. So it's super, super progressive, and unlike a lot of weighted sports where you just... You know, you can lift really heavy, so you always do, and then the next time you try to lift just a little bit more.
Yeah.
In this sport, you build the reps. So, say, for example, women are also competing with two 20-kilogram kettlebells and two 24-kilogram kettlebells. But you're not going to pick up, even though maybe I can do, you know, a few minutes or, say, 15, 20 reps with two 20-kilogram kettlebells.
Yep, this is heavy stuff.
You know, I don't even touch them until I can do 100 with two 16s. So that's how you know it's safe to move up to that next weight.
Well, I think it's like safe's the key word there because when guys, I mean, I know when you go to the gym, you look around, they know they can do a couple of reps with a big weight. But have they got to a point where they've actually earned the right to push that? Because that's when you see shoulders buckling. That's when you see like tendons getting hurt.
Yes. I just had a photo shoot with actually some super experienced bodybuilders yesterday. And we were going through this because, well, first of all, what I really liked about this woman I was talking to was she discussed how it's same idea as what I believe is just because you can lift something doesn't mean that you should. because there was a time, for example, I was doing an event called One Arm Long Cycle where I'm doing the cleans, but just one arm, and it was 24 kilograms.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that because that's another record you have, the long cycle.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
Yeah, so I'd been lifting, you know, for a really long time, I'd been lifting 24 kilograms, and people were like, oh, well, you should lift the 28 kilogram. Why? Because you can. That's not enough reason. I want to make sure I always get to a certain number, whether it's 100 reps or whatnot with one weight. Once I can do that comfortably in quotations, then I'll move up to the next weight. But otherwise, I'm not going to bother because your muscles will develop a lot faster than connective tissue, and that's when people are getting issues, when, you know, their ligaments and tendons are not able to maintain and support that weight for long periods of time. And in my opinion, it's not worth it.
Yeah, because this lifting, unless you can lift it properly with technique, then that's not a lift.
No, exactly.
I mean, anyone can struggle a weight. So I think that's a better definition. Like, I can struggle 100 kilograms on bench press.
Right.
Doesn't mean I can do 5 proper reps.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's not in my best interest. Now, to get back to your site here, like, you have 28-day ultimate body challenges. This is something that, so in the world we live in now with the internet, okay, obviously, you know, you've got your base, you've got your gym, but it's now online. Is this something that you wanted to kind of create as well? You believe that because you've got such a great philosophy towards these things, you've had great results, you've got a great track record. In devising these programs, how long does it, say, take to do this? Because I'm always fascinated by people who have these things online, and I see it on Instagram quite a lot. And my girlfriend's always looking at these things and showing me these things too. How do you devise something like that, and what are the sort of considerations that really go into creating something you can package and give to someone?
I
apologize in advance if that's a very long-winded question.
No.
I'm kind of feeling out the facts as I go along there.
I've never been asked that question, is how did I create it? That's why it took me a moment.
Because what I find difficult with this is that if you've got someone out there who is just completely oblivious to all the things that you know in your head, okay, like you got to go ultra-lay with these kind of things, like how do you devise the wording, the packaging, so that you know someone's going to get the most out of it?
Right. That was an extremely difficult process in some ways. So, yeah, as you laugh. But I think I just had to keep, and I still have to continue to keep revising my ebook and the information that I put out there. But a lot of it has just been through assessing what I've learned and what works best for my students without giving too much information, because like you said, they don't know all of my experience and what's in my head, and you don't want to overwhelm someone. So I look at all of the journey that I went on and all the things that I were told that were the least effective and the most effective, and I focus on those. So I think my challenge would be really similar in, well, not really, but a lot of it would be kind of like seeing a naturopath. So it's just taking people back to eating foods that heal the body. So, excuse me. So, eliminating the major foods that just happen to, like you said, you believe that lactose is something that pretty much no one should be eating. That's something you've come to realize, I'm guessing, through your own personal experience and reading and whatnot. And so there are certain things throughout the years that I've practiced myself and with my students that I know always make a big difference. So things like
gluten and dairy. So you've got these nice fundamentals you can base things on, yeah.
And so that's the biggest thing in the first 28 days. So the whole challenge is, it's you take the 28 days, and then after you do these major, I call them 8 major food challenges, well, like no gluten and no dairy are 2 examples, and then there's some other ones. Some are taking things out, and then others are adding things that are anti-inflammatory, and it's all whole foods, so it's super simple. There's no weighing foods, there's no calorie counting, there's no supplements, there's no buying extra products, extra pills, extra powders. So I keep it as simple as possible using real food. And then past the 28 days, that's where it's even more cool. 28 days is awesome because I'm working with people who have spent thousands of dollars and have spent years, some decades, trying to achieve certain goals, whether they're trying to lose, you know, their last 10 pounds, or they're trying to lose their first 30 pounds, if they've had psoriasis or eczema their entire life, and it clears up in 10 days. Like,
wow.
It's so cool. Yeah, they don't know a time.
It goes back to food that's going to heal your body. That's something you made very clear.
That's right. And so, like, they don't remember a time in their life where they didn't have psoriasis, and then suddenly it's gone within the very beginning. People with Crohn's, IBS, all different types of conditions, diabetes, and their, you know, high cholesterol, and their blood work, and all these really big things change super, super fast. So I love those 28 days all on their own, because these people are usually people coming to me because they're desperate and they really have tried everything and they care. It's no longer about how they look, it's how they feel.
Yeah.
And so for them to see those changes so quickly, and there aren't all these added crazy things, it's just, you know, taking certain things out and putting others in, is pretty awesome. And then past that, what I have is, I don't know the conversion. I think it's like, it's $29 Canadian. So think about 290 Rand, and they can keep me as their coach. That's what they pay monthly. I think 290 Rand. You just move that decimal.
Yeah, well.
Something like that.
Something like that. Either way, it's
right.
Difficult it's like, to work out nowadays with fluctuations.
Right? It's like nothing, though, and they get to keep me as their coach for the whole rest of the year. So I have loads of those students, and they're really cool to watch because they start to play with the different variables that you learn in the first 28 days. And it's what you talked about with the meat, for example. So there's certain foods that some people do respond better to others. Certain ones will irritate someone and then be totally fine with someone else. And we work through that process together. So I would say how I made that program really easy is those major eight ones in the beginning, just keeping the fundamentals, and then having them continue to work with me and ask me questions at any point in time that they want as their journey continues, because it doesn't just end at 28 days.
Well, see, that's what I really like about these philosophies that you have here, because even though you're pushing a 28-day thing, that's just to get you in the game. It's all big picture stuff, this. And this is something that people often forget. They go, oh, I'm doing... I often find people saying, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, almost like it's a conversation piece. It's like, okay, cool, but what's your real game here? Like, what's the real plan going forward? Because all of these wonderful things are useless if it's just 28 days of your life, and then it's like, okay, well, I'm cool now. Like, you're not. You got to carry it on.
That's right. And then I'll do it again when I fall off again. I'll jump on another 28-day thing. Yeah.
But this is quite interesting. And something I've also found as well with a lot of these systems that they're hugely expensive because of all the little add-ons and that kind of stuff. Now, if you were to set up, say, a basic kettlebell home gym kind of thing. Now, what you're saying about progress being repetition rather than weights means you don't have to essentially buy a whole bunch of stuff, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So, I mean, I look at my feeble frame at the moment saying, I want to get all these different things. Like, what would be a basic start point for me if I was to get into kettlebells? Now, bear in mind, I weigh 80 kilograms, so it's 170, 180 pounds. Moderate strength. Like where would my start point be before I get into anything too advanced here?
What would your goals be? Strength gain, size gain?
So basically, I would like to be nice and functionally strong and fit. I'm not looking to build too much muscle because I've come to terms with the fact that's not really my body type. I just want to be a bit stronger and to know that in a better shape, I'm going to have less injuries. Like, I feel like if I don't do something, I get injured quickly when I try to train again because I become quite weak.
Right.
So I'm looking for functional all-around strength here at the moment.
Right. So functional all-around strength, looking at you, someone who has an athletic background, you are active still, you are healthy. I would recommend for basic working out at home, someone like you starting with 2 8-kilogram bells, 2 12-kilogram bells, and then you might want 2 16s, and then you can just get one bell, single bell work that's anything heavier than that. So a 24-kilogram, and it might sound like a lot, so it's about 6 7 bells, but you can literally, I could develop a program with 100 exercises just from those bells right there, and you could work off that for years.
And that's for years, full body, everything.
And unlike a lot of other types of equipment like treadmills and whatnot, kettlebells are indestructible. You're never going to need to replace a kettlebell, so it's a one-time investment as well.
That is a good point. This is a little very interesting.
I noticed that as a gym owner.
Sure.
Don't have to fix anything.
Exactly. And then, you know, obviously if you're looking around doing certain cardio, if you like running, you said just carry on doing that. If you like cycling, carry on doing that kind of stuff. This is going to be your basis, so to speak. The other stuff works along with it.
With kettlebells?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people I train don't touch a kettlebell. So I have body weight programs because I really believe you could be as strong as you want to be, especially if you're talking functional strength, by just body weight exercises. So whether it's jump squats or lunges, burpees, push-ups, planking, all kinds of plank variations, you can develop a lot of strength, and you can do the cardio, like you said, with going for runs or swimming. You can do any type of body weight exercise to get your heart rate up as well. So, personally, I like to do running and cycling and additional exercises like that to my kettlebell lifting. Mm-hmm. And I do think kettlebells are brilliant for everybody of all ages. Even, you know, like I've trained kids as young as 4 years old lifting kettlebells. Oh, they have a blast. They love them. You just give them a really safe, lightweight, and, you know, have them almost like Simon says, follow along, and they love it.
That's brilliant, because again, you're engaging your entire body. You're not just saying lift that with your arm or pick that up. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Jennifer, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time left. This is just flown by. Where can people find you online, contact you? If they do like this kind of stuff and have similar kind of issues that they want to kind of work through, where can people find you? This is your big plug moment, basically.
Oh, okay. So my website is Jennifer Hintenberger. I'll just spell that, HintenBerger.co. And my email would be jenniferhintenberger@gmail.com.
And you're on Instagram.
And I'm on Instagram, yes, at Jennifer Hintenberger, of course. Pretty simple. There's nothing extra in there. And I'm on Facebook as well.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, we could have spoken about another hour. We didn't really get into like the fact that you're still competing. You say you're about to go to Australia.
Yes. Okay. I was just in Australia, actually. I was in Australia about 4 weeks ago. I was in Tasmania and then Gold Coast and then Sydney. And then I just competed in New Zealand. And came back here, and then I'm going to head to Melbourne next to compete next Saturday, and then Tasmania the next Saturday.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay, well, maybe we catch up with you some other time then, just to get more into that side of things. And of course, on Instagram, you do put like posts of that kind of stuff up.
Yeah, I post my lifting videos and whatever things that I'm hoping are motivating that day.
Okay. Well, Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us today. Your time has been brilliant, hopefully very inspiring. Of course, if you are just catching the back end of this live, this whole thing will be a podcast, and you get all of her details on the Bounce of Cereals today. But seeing as she brought up Australians, this is a really great Aussie rules clip I have to play for you before we run out of time. This is back in the 80s, back when if you didn't have a mullet, you basically were a whoopsie.
Alan gets the ball, chips it up to 13.
That's Angus, I think.
Ian Angus kicks a left foot over to
Hughes,
who got sent off earlier. Hughes handballs unselfishly out of Rickman for his first goal of the day.
Yes, that wasn't Billy's fault.
No, Billy had to go out, had to meet the player. Such a clever player.
Oh, God! Right!
My arms are caught!
Round for the hand pass. Not good enough. Knight, Ricky Knight, got it, and they'll get a goal out of it.
This poor umpiring.
It was
a terrible non-decision.
Good play. Hughes in for a goal, and bad umpiring.
This poor, and it wasn't the poor.
Bad umpiring.
Where is that bloke?
A common cry from the commentary box there.
What's that bloke?
Very poor non-decision.
Some easy goals. And the protection Barry Rand gets from the umpires, I'd say he's a certainty to. He's a certainty to win the list.
Yeah, I reckon he is too. But what a quarter! Okay, don't turn off Shane, because I think that we've got some real telling comments from the boys in the back. Bruce and Emmett, take over. What are your thoughts on the game? And can Springvale win it?
I suppose you'd have to say in real terms that the game is, in order to score, make up three goals on. On the Vales at this stage, the game has to be beyond the Williamstown, but you never know. It's a funny thing. They get the first goal on the board. It could be anybody's game.
But Graham Dempsey kicks off ground, but Block Mead, who's played a tremendous game and nearly my best player. Oh, he dived on the ball. The guy kicked it out of his hands.
That's a free kick.
Still chasing.
He's still chasing. His shot at goal's through. They don't miss him. They get near him.
Well, that's a lovely goal.
Bad decision by the
umpire. No, lovely goal.
It's a great effort by that particular player. And this game is anybody's. Don't worry about that.
Kick forward. Rickman, nearly a great mark over the back. Good tackle. Slevinson shot at goal. Great smother by Mead for a point. McCormick, good hand pass. Good play. Mendy.
Oh, this has gone to the commentary box.
He's kicked it to us. It stayed in over the line.
Get out, you dog.
Special comments by the reported player. Very vital time of the season. Get reported two.
Centre wing.
Harder,
rounding play. Beautiful hit down to Hughes. Runs through the pack beautifully, Hughes.
Jesus Christ,
sends it forward. Shannon recovers better. He's got Rickman as an opponent. Pick up beautifully by Honus. Into Maloney in the centre. He takes the mark. Great play.
Played a great goal.
He's got Foy. He's got Nampra. Nampra's got plenty of yards and space. He gives it back to Maloney.
Chip
to Foy. He's out of bounce.
This bench is tough. Still on, fellas, at the back.
He can't mark. He's got Clarkey in the full pocket. He passes it off to Prosser. Kicks it off the ground.
Look at this.
Good skills. Kicks it off the ground.
Beauty!
Prosser,
what a fantastic move.
Move made.
Dempster on the balls. Won the game.
That was no earthquake. That was the commentary box.
Prosser. Commentary box has won the flag.
Well, Prosser with fantastic skill.
The crowd has officially roared.
Battle no, Tobacco!
Have a rest, man. Glad to follow the play.
Oh, exactly.
Round will not take a mark with
Ian. Isn't this great? You can listen to these guys all day. This is I've probably listened to this clip like two or three times already. These guys are fantastic. It just sounds like a bunch of blokes with a few tinnies in the background. And Aussie Rules is a strange game. I mean, let's make no bones about it. It is very odd. It's kind of like, I mean, look at kangaroos. I mean, there's some strange things in Australia. But Aussie Rules and these guys with these micro shorts, like ultra macho men. And it's just odd. Anyways, this is from the VFA footy, the Halcony days. Oh, I've cocked that up, but hey, let's carry on. And these guys are a bunch of legends. And like, you wonder, how did Pinot Noir and Chardonnay ever come into this country when you watch these blokes running around? I mean, that's just the height of just blokeness. It's brilliant. So this show has gotten away from me a little bit. I do apologize. But, yeah, I mean, it's just so great to chat to people like Jennifer who are doing such great things. You know, she travels the world, hey, like literally. She was just telling me now while I was saying goodbye, the different countries that she's going to be in for between now and the rest of the year. It's insane how kettlebell sports is like a real big deal. And, I mean, she really is. She's become quite the impressive kettlebell sports person, and she's achieved so much. I mean, she's got world records in so many different sort of things. You must go to her site, check out the stuff, and I think it could be something that you could really, really get into. Just to wrap up quickly, Super Rugby from the weekend, this coming weekend now, we've got some really great matches up. I still can't believe the Crusaders are unbeaten. You look at that team. There's a team without any real big stars. The stars that they do have aren't even playing. I mean, there's no Reed, Whitelock, Dagg. These guys are all out. Plus, you've got the fact that there's no one else post that. But they beat the Hurricanes last weekend. Stay unbeaten this week. So Friday, tomorrow, 9:35, they've got the Chiefs in Hamilton. I think they're playing in Hamilton. It's a Chiefs home game. So the Chiefs, no one's kind of really been making a lot of noise about them, but they're still very much there, thereabouts, as one of the top teams. They lost the Stormers, but I think that was it. They beat the Hurricanes already. They're playing the Crusaders. 9:35 Friday. Huge match, that one. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. Yes, I know. I'm going to go against the Crusaders 2 weeks going. I'm going for them. Stormers versus the Blues. Sonny Bill is playing for the Blues. That'll be a big draw card in Newlands. Stormers are a much better side this time round. They've got some players coming back. Damien D'Allen is back. Ibn Etzebeth, Peter Stetatoy is back. Francois Herb is back. Like, it's a much better team. So I reckon the Stormers can get back to winning ways. 7 o'clock Friday night. And then Saturday, we've got the Hurricanes versus Cheetahs, 9:35. Can't see the Cheetahs doing anything other than getting a hammering there. Then the Force versus the Highlanders, 11:45. Same, I think, relatively tight, this one. Force had a good win last week, but together with the travel and the fact that the Highlanders are pretty decent. 11:45 Saturday, look for the Highlanders to win that one. Sunbulls versus the Sharks. The Sharks, well, they lost the Kings last week. No Lambie. There's no Kerwin Bosch either. So it's a very inexperienced backline. It's got to do the goods there. But they should be too strong for the Sunwolves. 1:55 Saturday afternoon. That one is in Singapore. Then the Lions versus the Bulls. Got to think Lions going to take that one. That's at 5:15 on Saturday. And then the Kings versus the Brumbies. Final match on Saturday. Kings with some big injuries, unfortunately. Clutty in particular. I mean, that guy's been an absolute powerhouse all over the play for the Kings. He's out for the weekend. Brumbies are going to be favourites for that one. 7:30 in PE. And then Sunday, Waratahs versus the Rebels, 8:05. That's it. I've got to wrap it up from here. All the other things I want to talk about, if you go on to thebounce.co.za, there's an article about gay footballers in the Premier League and if that'll ever be a reality. And of course, there's a big Super Rugby preview and a whole bunch of other stuff. So, next week, it'll be a bit more chilled out as far as we can catch up with a lot more sports. But thanks for joining me this week. Everything else, catch me in the morning here on Cliff Central on the Gareth Cliff Show. 6 until 9, I do a daily sports recap from around 6:30. Otherwise, follow me at Follow the Bounce on Twitter and all the other usual stuff. Have a look around the bounce.co.za. Plug, plug, plug. I'm actually going to start pre-recording these plugs because I'm just so bloody terrible at it. But anyway, thank you for joining me this week. Hope you have a great weekend of sport. CliffCentral.com.